Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into Coffee Break this Friday morning. Thanks for finishing out the week with us here. We've got a good show for you today. Bob Drake, the fire chief out at Tri-Lakes, is in this morning, the volunteer fire department out there. We've also got Mark Winiger and Aaron Helford. T-Drug, these two guys in. They were up there along with Bob at the North Hills Fire, did incredible work to help keep that thing in check. And guys, I appreciate you coming in today. It sounds like you guys had four calls yesterday. So you did all that yesterday and then still came in this morning. So I appreciate that.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. They're still a little tired here. They're just looking at me going, do we talk now? I don't let's run down the line a little bit. I guess to just introduce yourself so just people can match voice to name. And we might as well, Bob, you're the veteran here. We might as well start on your end.
Yeah. Bob Drake, fire chief with Tri-Lakes Fire, and everybody knows me.
Aaron Helford, I'm an assistant chief, one of the assistant chiefs.
And Mark Winiger, I'm a captain with Tri-Lakes Fire.
Okay. And how long have you guys all been working with the department?
I started about 13 years ago.
Yeah, I think I'm at 12.
And Bob, you've been there. You formed the fire department, right? Is that
no? My dad actually was one of the founding members in 1973. So yeah, I've been there since 95.
Yeah. So what are you guys, I mean, you guys all, I always love pointing it out when you guys come in and chat on the show, the volunteers, you all are volunteers. I mean, you guys have day jobs. What do you do when you're not fighting fire?
I build houses as a general contractor.
Okay.
And I work for Department of Transportation and Facilities.
Okay. So, I mean, why take the time? Why take the risk to do this? Because you got family, you've got friends, you've got a job. Now you're tacking this on. So why do you do that?
I saw the fire department in action down the street from my house, and I thought, well, that looked kind of cool. And so I got a hold of Bob, put an application in, and went to a training, and been hooked ever since.
And it started for me back when I was in high school, and I watched the Spokane Hills burn. And it just did something to me back then and later in the years when I had the time to actually volunteer, I got a hold of Bob and it's been fun and I like helping people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you, my assumption is the answer is yes, but you guys remember sort of that first time you went out on a call? Does that one, I know that tends to stick with guys. I mean, do you remember that first call you went on as an official volunteer?
I don't specifically remember the actual first call, but I know that the first year or so was very hectic and it's like there's so much going on. It's like, what do I even do?
Yeah.
I'm trying to learn everything and figure out where to go and, you know, try to be the new, you know, learn how to get there and, you know, do everything you can.
Well, of course, you know, volunteer firefighters and volunteer fire department, but you guys don't, it's not just fires that you respond to. I mean, you guys are doing a lot of medical calls as well.
Correct, yes. And we had two back-to-back yesterday, and I mean, that's the majority of our calls are medical calls, and we get a fire, it's very rare.
Which is a good thing.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, it means you've got to have a pretty well-rounded skill set, right? I mean, you're not just going when something's on fire. You're anytime somebody's in need, you're showing up.
Yeah, every call's different by that.
And we are the department of other. If it doesn't fit into anybody else, the fire department gets paged. So, I mean, it's some of the stuff that we get paged to is
weird.
You make me want to ask about the weird calls now, Bob.
You don't want to ask.
We're talking this morning with Bob Drake. He's the fire chief out at Tri-Lakes Volunteer Fire Department. Mark Winiger and Aaron Helford also out there. These guys all were out there on the North Hills Fire. That was a tough one. It whipped around, changed a little bit on you guys. Bob, I don't know if this one's for you to start, but can you just sort of walk folks through the initial stages of that fire and the response? And because I think we see fire and okay, then the fire department shows up and it's just there. But there's a lot of steps involved and there's time. And I mean, walk us through sort of those initial stages of you get a page that, hey, there's a fire up in the hills.
Well, the ironic thing is that on that Friday, So every Friday when the fire danger's high, us and all of our partners, so DNRC, the Forest Service, the Sheriff's Office, and as many of the fire chiefs as we can, get together for lunch at Jorgensen's, and we sit there at noon and to 1 o'clock, and we talk about what's going on, what kind of resources there are around, you know, what kind of resources are not around, and we had just started our lunch. We just ordered lunch, and we were starting to talk, and the pager went off for the first department, which was West Valley and the county. And he just looked at his phone, jumped up, and ran out, never said boo other than cancel my lunch. And then we kind of looked around and thought, well, okay, well, that's not unusual. We thought he had a medical call, you know. Mm-hmm. Then it wasn't 2 minutes, and then the rest of the pager started going off, and we started looking at it. We all jumped and run. So we were already together. Mm-hmm. And we're already. So it's something that we do every Friday, talk about what's going on. And then Jerry Shepard was the chief of West Valley. He went to the origin of the fire, and it was on the edge of ours between us. So I ran around from the east side, came in from the east side trying to figure out, okay, well, if it does take off, is there some place we can stop it? And we just tag team it like that all the time.
Well, and by the time you get up to this, get up to the fire, you're not getting up there shortly after the fire started. I mean, not really, because by the time you get there, this thing's been burning for a while.
It's been burning a little bit, and the good part was that as Jerry Shepard went in, he took pictures of the license plates of the vehicles going out. So we had a good idea of who was in there. Mm-hmm. And then DNRC was, I think, the first ones on scene with a brush truck, and they started working on it. And then we got our first helicopter within, oh, wow, maybe 30 minutes of the page, 20 minutes of the page, and they started working. And then, it just mushrooms from there, just like the cloud does. I mean,
right.
Hit the mutual aid button and started pouring resources in. But it's a really narrow, really crappy road.
Yeah, it's tough. You can't get up there.
And the road's just awful. I mean, there's the holes and stuff in the road are so big that you got a 2 or 3 mile an hour road.
I mean, it damaged a truck, didn't it? A water tender?
Oh, several.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you stream it all in there, and then you're kind of committed because you can't run very fast from it. And that's ultimately what happened is the fire was going to the north, which is a good thing. It's going to run into the old 1984 fire scar, and it's going to go away from houses if it's going to the north, at least our houses. But then the wind changed and Mother Nature laughed at us and brought
turned
it
around
right
and came back at you.
Right. And we were running. Mm-hmm. Running from the fires that burned over in the place that we had the trucks that were parked. And, so you can hold it and hold it and hold it as long as you can. But the fuels up there are so thick that you can't walk through them.
Yeah.
And so
this was ultimately a drop the hoses and get out kind of situation.
Yeah. It was bad. And then take accountability and make sure we've got everybody. And then while these guys are doing that, Sheriff and I are trying to figure out, okay, now where is this going to go? And we have a volunteer fire behavior analyst that's forgot more about fire than any of us will ever know. And he was Sonny Steiger. You've met him before. He was doing projections, trying to figure out, okay, where's this going to go based on the weather projections and all that stuff. And then that's when we had to pull the trigger on. The first house is less than a half a mile away. And we just said, you know, we looked at it and went, the 25 mile an hour winds are predicted, all this stuff. I mean, our worst nightmare. This was our worst nightmare.
And how fast how fast can that fire, you say it's a half mile away from that house. I guess when we look at it going, well, that's quite a ways. But in terms of fire behavior, how fast could a fire eat up that half a mile?
What do you guys think? 15 minutes?
Yep.
Easy 15 minutes.
Yeah, so that's not – I mean, that's nothing.
And it took us 3.5 hours to evacuate the first 104 homes.
Yeah, it's incredible.
3.5 hours.
Well, and this is a situation, I'm assuming, especially initial stages, where you really have to be intentional and almost slow yourself down, because you get up there and you know the immediacy, you know that time matters, but you go quick, you're going to make mistakes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to find that line, I suppose.
Well, it isn't our first rodeo, right. So that's for us. And then you guys can tell how many times have we tabletopped the North Hills fire, because I'm literally, this is our worst nightmare, because there are so many houses and the roads are so crappy.
And one way in and narrow.
Yeah. And the roads are all, they're not straight, nice little streets that go straight. I mean, they're all follow the terrain and everything else. And then, so this is not it's not the first time we planned this. And so that helps take some of that.
Sure.
Out of there. And so we have population protection plans, and people's eyes glaze over. We plan on where are we going to put roadblocks, where are we going to do all this stuff to protect the people, what are we going to do with Deer Park Road, what are we going to do with, because in Tri Lakes our population doubles every Friday in the summertime,
right?
Because we have so many campgrounds. And so those campgrounds are all full, and the fire, if it follows what the weather's going to do, we have a big problem.
Yeah, there was the potential for it to jump the river and go a couple miles past that, wasn't there?
Correct. And that's what the projections were showing. So, I mean, we just – there's a lot of science and a lot of there's a lot of judgment, and that's why we lean on people like Sonny Steiger to do that, because – He like I said, he's forgot about it. And then we just start. We're in the beginning, we're always reacting to the fire. We never went on offense really until Sunday, Monday. Mm-hmm. We're always reacting to the fire because there's not enough resources to do anything else.
Well, and I think it shows, I guess it shows a couple things. I mean, one, it shows just how seriously you took this and how big a deal it was, but it also shows how many people we've got that are willing to step up. That it was a parking lot out there. You had so many units and people responding. That's a good thing.
So we've lost entire towns in California in the last couple of years. We have lost, starting back in 2003 in the San Diego fires. There were 17 people lost their lives in those, and there was a gentleman who studied every one of those 17 victims and tried to figure out what got them where they were and how they died and what were the circumstances. I mean, they turned left instead of right, and it cost them their life. And so there's been a lot of stuff put into that, trying to figure out why are we losing people in these wildland fires. And so when we look at the North Hills, we built all that in when we're doing our planning, and the fuels are so bad that we have no time. So from the beginning, we're talking about evacuations, because if it gets away, there's no time. And like I said, it took 3.5 hours to do 104 homes. We had 325 homes in that area. It'd take 13 hours to evacuate them all. And it's like, we got 15 minutes before the first house is, and so we start evacuating from the closest to the furthest and looking at the projections. And of course, the other thing is we don't want to evacuate them if we don't have to. I mean, just imagine getting ripped out of your life, and it's such a horrible process that, I mean, we don't do it lightly, but at the same time, we don't want them to turn right instead of left and drive into the fire and die.
Yeah.
And literally that's what people are doing. More of them die on the roads than in their houses.
Yeah.
Because there's no protection in their cars.
There's so many things go into it. And we do have more things to talk about. We've got to take a quick break. So we're going to do that, and then we'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk more Volunteer Fire and North Hills Fire coming up on Coffee Break. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk. Now, back to our show. Welcome back in. This is Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for joining us today. Bob Drake is the fire chief at Tri-Lakes Volunteer Fire. Mark Winiger and Aaron Helford, both out there, volunteers as well. These guys all were in the North Hills fighting that fire that we had here just recently. And we were talking before the break about a couple things. One of them, just how many folks and how many departments you had out there fighting this thing. And my guess is that has the potential to be very unwieldy. You know, the more moving parts you have with anything, the more it can go off the rails. How do you avoid that? Because it seemed like this thing worked very, very well from the jump.
Well, we do it by practicing, and we do it by we practice with our partners. And then the other problem is that, you know, since 2000, we've done, I mean, the number of fires is staggering, the number of times that we've actually had to do this. And I say that in Lewis and Clark County because we work so closely together with all our partners in DNRC and Forest Service. BLM had trucks up there. And, you know, all the volunteers, and we ended up pulling volunteers from Cascade County, Gallatin County. But we use the ICS system, which was developed by fire departments long, long ago. It's a proven thing. So these two guys, Aaron was the division soup on which side? Was the Black Sandy side?
Yeah, Black Sandy.
And Mark was the division soup on the Mountain Heritage side. And that's how we do it. We break it into units, and we assign resources out to them based on what resources we think they're going to need. So we had the tactical tenders were out where they could make the most difference in the grass, which was on the Mountain Heritage side. And then we had the smaller brush trucks and the tenders that don't pump and roll and do that stuff supporting the Black Sandy side. And you try and get the mix of resources and the mix of people right. And then you put people like these guys in charge of it and tell them, you know, I'm standing here beside you. Here's our overall strategy. Go make this happen.
Right. Well, and then on top of that, I guess you've got the air resources as well. I mean, how valuable is that for you guys to know that you've got the planes, you've got the helicopters, you've got those guys up there?
It's huge. It's you see those helicopters and big heavy air tankers come in, and granted, they're not going to save the day, but it's a big weight lifted off your shoulders knowing that you've got that kind of air support.
Well, and some of that we talked about, you know, how thick it was. Some of that is they just kept the fire from getting into the tops of the trees, right? I mean, a lot of that wasn't even getting down to the ground.
No.
The helicopters, I mean, we love the wop, wop, wop. I mean, it gives you a warm and fuzzy because you know there's somebody up there that's got your back if things go really bad. I mean, because they can drop on us. And, you know, back in 2000, they would drop on the road and we'd drive through right behind the water drop to get to the other side. And I mean, they are our part of our safety stuff on the ground. And when 923 comes around and they're grounded, sphincters get tighter after that, because I mean, you really do have part of your safety is gone.
Yeah, your net's gone.
Right. And then in the morning, it's, you know, it comes back on slowly as they meet all their requirements because they can only fly so many hours. They can only fly. They got to have so much rest. We think there's tons of rules on the ground. There's tons of rules in the air because it's catastrophic when they crash one of those and they don't want to do that. So, but the tankers on this one, they weren't terribly effective of holding the fire because the fuels, it wouldn't get to the ground, but they were critical because one of our goals was to hold it west of the Missouri River. We did not want it jumping the river, and that's why they pounded the heck out of it with, I don't know how many million dollars worth of retardant, and they were helping control the intensity of the fire because the plumes are what carry those embers, and this, we had half mile spotting. We did not want 2 mile spotting.
Yeah.
You know, and those air tankers, you know, they did 63 loads on Sunday. I mean, that was, you know, saw that in the paper. It was a record for them. They just revamped all that stuff. That 63 loads is what kept, you know, that's part of the ingredient to keep it from jumping the river.
So ultimately, how did you get this thing under control? Because it was unwieldy from the start in terms of just the fuel up there. You couldn't be standing in the trees fighting this thing. So ultimately, how did this thing get put out?
It burned out in the grass.
Yeah, it held at the roads where we wanted it to, and they did some controlled burning to 2 points where they wanted to catch it, and everything held, and the weather kind of created or helped itself.
Yeah, the winds, I don't know if you saw, but there were some days where we had 3 plumes going, and they're all leaned over in a different direction.
Yeah.
And we're going nuts on the ground trying to go, because the fire's just, it's just going every direction. And we're having to split resources, and we don't, you know, you don't have enough to do that. But at the same time, by having 3 plumes instead of 1 plume, again, we don't have that 30,000-foot, 40,000-foot plume, which then jumps the river.
Well, we were talking during the break about the importance of mitigation and about taking care of your property. You know, it doesn't matter so much that, you know, hey, these trees right next to my bedroom window just look pretty, because when something like this happens, that you guys can't do anything about that house at that point, can you?
No, and we had 3 houses that I believe were saved simply because they did some really good mitigation. Otherwise, I truly believe those houses would have went up.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, we use those places as safe zones, and they mitigate around it, and it gives us a good area to be in if something does happen where we can, you know, protect ourselves as well.
Well, because you were at points, you guys had crews, I mean, essentially in backyards in this, didn't you? I mean, you were... Oh, standing right against houses. You can't do that if the mitigation work hasn't been done.
Well, and now they can throw stones at the chief, but I mean that's where those policy decisions and stuff come in. I mean, we are going to assign resources to the houses that cared about their house enough to do mitigation. And if they didn't do that, there isn't enough resources in the world to protect them while smoke's in the air. So if they did nothing, why in the world would we risk firefighters in there trying to protect a house where they didn't care enough to even do their own? And so it really becomes a resource allocation issue, and there's not enough. And that's what we're seeing in California, everywhere else. I mean, California's got a bigger Air Force than I don't know how many states put together, and they still can't control their fires. You can't control it with all that stuff if there isn't mitigation done on the ground.
Yeah, well, and that dovetails a little bit, too, when we talk about just what you can do. And when you mentioned, you know, it took that long to evacuate folks, it's important that when the sheriff comes knocking on your door that you listen to that. I know a lot of people didn't, and that can really impact and affect the way you guys fight fire.
Well, and that's a weird... A lot of people didn't initially, because we started evacuating on Friday night because of Saturday's
projections.
Mm-hmm. Because we knew we were going to we potentially could lose a bunch, and we didn't have time. And so we started evacuating in the dark on Friday night. Well, they can't see the fire. There's no smoke at their house, and we're asking them to evacuate. So we had maybe 50%. 40% of people who did or did not evacuate, you know, and so, which is really dismal. It's very discouraging when you're doing it at the time. The next day, when the fire laid down and the smoke came in, they came out of the hills like ants. I mean, a lot of people evacuated because they didn't understand, because it wasn't knocking at their door yet. And we were trying to stay ahead of the curve, because we're always getting caught behind the curve. And so we really, I believe, had a 90% or better evacuation rate it just took them a little while. And when the smoke and ash started falling, then a lot of them came out when they deemed that it was that we weren't kidding.
Right. But you guys aren't going to do that unless, you know, you're not just guessing. You know what? Maybe it'd be this. If somebody knocks on your door and it's an official and says this is happening, it folks really ought to listen.
We had 30-35 mile an hour winds projected out of the northwest, and our projections that were being done by the fire behavior analyst had the fire jumping the causeway.
Yeah.
Where the fishing access stuff is, and burning everything from where the fire was all the way to the causeway, jumping over to Dana's Point and jumping over to El Dorado Bar on the other side in the York District. I mean, that's the projections that we're looking at, and we're sitting here going, okay. And those projections are based on worst case scenario. Well, that's what we do. We plan for the worst and hope for the best. And we're looking at those projections and going, we can't live with this. I mean, there are way too many lives in this area for us to just sit back and wait and see if it happens.
Yeah. We've got Bob Drake. He's the fire chief out at Tri-Lakes. Mark Weniger and Aaron Halford also in this morning. Just about out of time. So, guys, I appreciate you coming in. Bob, if folks are interested in saying, you know what, I want to join that crew, I want to help, what do they need to do?
Call me, 431-3600. That's my cell phone number. I'll answer. Go out on our website, and there's an application to join. I encourage anybody that wants to do that, if we're not the right department for where you live, I'll get you in contact with the right department. And every single department out there is looking for volunteers. And we need you. I mean, we need people.
Absolutely. Guys, I appreciate all that you do. Thank you for what you did up there and for what you continue to do. That's all the time we have for Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.